September 20th, time I'm up. So last time we talked about Samson's. We're doing continuing off the Judges. If you want to turn over to 1 Samuel, we're going to continue on with Eli this evening. And we'll see how far we get through this. A little background on some of the characters we're going to see. I've got them written on the board. Elkanah, as we get ready to start this, is the father of Samuel. Samuel, of course, will play into this, but we'll get to him next time, Lord willing. But he's the father of Samuel. But we're introduced to him here. We're going to find out in this first chapter that he had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Those are also written on the board over there below his name. He loved Hannah most, although she is barren. For Hannah, of course, she's one of the wives of Elkanah. She is barren until God blesses her with Samuel. She prays there. Later on, she would have some more kids, though, and we'll find that out as well. Peninnah, the other of Elkanah's wives, is not barren, and she taunts Hannah because Hannah's barren. And we'll see that as well. Samuel is the last of the judges, but we'll discuss more on him later, although he does come into play quite a bit tonight. Eli is a priest of the Lord at Shiloh. And I've written Shiloh on the board here as well because this is the main location where our reading will take place the majority of the time. And he also served as a judge. Shiloh, just so you know, its location is 10 miles north of Jerusalem. So kind of get in your mind where Jerusalem's at. This Shiloh is about 10 miles north of that. Okay. He has two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, who are priests, but they're evil priests. They're bad priests. And of course, we'll learn about them. At the end, he dies at the age of 98 after judging Israel for 40 years. His sons, Hophni and Phinehas, also written those on the board there. Again, they're his sons of Eli. These are two evil priests who profane sacrifices and the sanctuary, among other things, as we'll find out. Again, most of this place takes place at Shiloh. So with that, let's turn to chapter 1, 1 Samuel. And let's read through that in the introduction of these characters as we learn more about them. There was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the mountains of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah. He was the son of Jerom, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. The name of one was Hannah. The name of the other was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh, this place we're talking about. Also, the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. And so it was year by year, and she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. So imagine her year after year knowing this was going to come again. And she's going to get made fun of or provoked in whatever way she did by this other person. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" And so he kind of senses, I think, what's going on, what grieves her. So Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in the bitterness of her soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. And she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me, and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head." Now, last time we talked about that Nazarite vow. There's all kinds of vows. We're not saying this was a Nazarite vow. Here she only promises this, no shaving the head. But there was no talk about the no grapes and so forth. So we don't know. There's all kinds of vows. But this was her particular vow on this. And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, Only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. And therefore Eli thought she was drunk. So Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered and said, "No, my lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now." Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him." And she said, "Let your maidservant find favor in your sight." And so the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. So she was content with this after speaking with him. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. So they're back home now. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked for him from the Lord." Now the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "Not until the child is weaned." So obviously this is at least the next year, if not the year after, and so forth. But she did not go up, for she said to her husband, "Not until the child is weaned. Then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever." So she's about to give up her child. So imagine what she's thinking now. So Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word." The woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Of course, again, she's knowing this is, she's about to give him up. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bulls, one ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, in this place. And the child was young. And they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. And she said, "O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord." So she's reminding him who she was. "For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked of him. And therefore I also have lent him to the Lord. So as long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord." And so they worshipped the Lord there. As we go into chapter 2, it opens up with Hannah's prayer. We're not going to go through that for the sake of time. Okay. But it closes in verse 11 of chapter 2 with them leaving Samuel with Eli. "Then Elkanah went to his house at Ramah, but the child ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest." Okay, so he'd just been weaned age-wise. So he was young. We know that. And beginning in verse 12 is where we're going to see the wicked acts of Eli's sons. Let's get a little background first so we'll understand a little better before we start reading there. Let's turn over to Leviticus chapter 3. Now, I don't want to make this a study at all of the sacrifices, but just give a couple of examples here and a couple of thoughts here before we see. Because the portion where it talks about what they did is actually a pretty short portion, so let's see how much we can get out of it. So let's look at one example of the peace offering. Actually, I want to read the entire. Let's read the entire chapter 3 of Leviticus 3 here. Note the multiple mentions of fat. Fat. When his offering is a sacrifice of a peace offering, if he offers it of the herd, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before the Lord. And he shall lay his hand on the head of his offering and kill it at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And Aaron's sons, the priests, shall sprinkle the blood all around on the altar. And he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering an offering made by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. Aaron's sons shall burn it on the altar upon the burnt sacrifice, which is on the wood that is on the fire, as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. If his offering is a sacrifice of a peace offering to the Lord is of a flock, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish. If he offers a lamb as his offering, then he shall offer it before the Lord. And he shall lay his hand on the head of the offering and kill it before the tabernacle of meeting. Aaron's son shall sprinkle its blood all around the altar. Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering as an offering made by fire to the Lord its fat, and the whole fat tail, which he shall remove close to the backbone, and the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove. And the priest shall burn them on the altar as food, an offering made by fire to the Lord. And if his offering is a goat, he shall offer it before the Lord. He shall lay his hand on its head and kill it before the tabernacle of meeting. The sons of Aaron shall sprinkle its blood all around the altar. Then he shall offer from its offering as an offering made by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. And the priest shall burn them on the altar as food, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma. And then we're told all the fat is whose? The Lord's. That's the point of all this. We're told in verse 17, this shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations and all your dwellings. And we're told a little more, you shall neither shall eat neither fat nor blood. So we have this example here. So the fat is God's. That's the point of that reading there. We're also going to see that some sacrifices could be kept and ate within a certain time frame. Leviticus chapter 7. And again, we're not studying so much which sacrifices these were, just making the point. Begin at verse 1. Likewise, this is the law of the trespass offering. It is most holy. In the place where they kill the burnt offering, they shall kill the trespass offering. And its blood he shall sprinkle all around the altar. He shall offer from its all its fat, the fat tail, and the fat that covers the entrails, the two kidneys, the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. Verse 5, and the priest shall burn them on the altar as an offering made by fire to the Lord. It's a trespass offering. Every male among the priests may eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. The trespass offering is like the sin offering. There is one law for them both. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. And the priest who offers anyone burnt offering, the priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has offered. So they get to keep certain portions and eat certain portions of these, certain ones of these offerings. Drop down to verse 11. This is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings, which he shall offer to the Lord. If he offers it with a thanksgiving, he shall offer with the sacrifices of thanksgiving unleavened cakes mixed with oil, unleavened wafers anointed with oil, or cakes of blended flour mixed with oil. Besides the cakes as his offering, he shall offer leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace offering. And from it he shall offer one cake from each offering as a heave offering to the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood of the peace offering. The flesh of the sacrifice, verse 15, of his peace offering for the thanksgiving shall be eaten the same day as it's offered. So we got a time frame here. He shall not leave any of it until the morning. But if the sacrifice is offered as a vow or a voluntary offering, it shall be eaten the same day that he offers his sacrifice. But on the next day, the remainder of it also may be eaten. So these 2 days, they have the two-day window to eat this. Verse 17, the remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day must be burned with fire. And if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering is eaten at all on the third day, it shall not be accepted, nor shall it be imputed to him. It should be an abomination to him who offers it, and the person who eats of it should be bear guilt. So we've got a time frame they can use this. Now, the fat belongs to who? God. There are certain portions of certain sacrifices that the people or the priest, the offerers or the priest, could keep. But they had a time frame. Before we read those acts of Eli's sons again, let's note one more thing. We're going to see a custom at the beginning of this reading, which I'm not aware of, unless someone else is, that I see anywhere in the Bible, okay? To my knowledge, anyway. It's not part of the Hebrew law, but keep in mind one thing that we've heard over and over many times. That's what we're running here. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what? What was right in their own eyes, okay? So there's a little mixture here of what we're putting together here. Back to 1 Samuel. Let's see what they did and what we know now and see how bad it is. Begin at verse 12. Now the sons of Eli were corrupt, and they did not know the Lord. And the priest's custom, this is that custom I was talking about, with the people was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servants would come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. Then he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, and the priest would take for himself all that the flesh hook brought up. So they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Is anyone aware of this custom? Is this a custom I'm just missing or forgotten? This is not a Hebrew law, is it? It's a custom. I can't think of anywhere else it's mentioned. But again, as we know from other things, sometimes the Jewish people did a custom. The forefathers do customs that weren't necessarily clothed in the law. But here's a custom we're told here that they did, and the people accepted it, it seems. That, let's kind of think of it here. They bring their sacrifice. The offerer brings a sacrifice to the priest. The priest prepares it and does all those. The portion that he can keep, the offerer, he has how many days to eat it? 2. And so the priests, these evil priests here, know that this person has just offered a sacrifice. He knows where the meat is. So he sends his servant there to do what we just read about, this three-prong, to take some extra meat here. Verse 15. Also, in addition to this, so doing this new custom here, where they're taking the portion that is allotted to the offered, that's the offered meat, and the priest is taking extra meat that wasn't allotted to him. That's number one. Number two, also, verse 15, before they burn the fat, and who's the fats? It's God's. Before they burn the fat, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who sacrificed, give meat for roasting to the priest, for he will not take boiled meat from you, but raw. We know raw meat has what on it? It has the fat on it, and it removed you. Verse 16, if the man said to him, they should really burn the fat first, then you may take as much as your heart desires after that, he would answer him then, no, you must give it to me now. If not, I'll take it by force. And therefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. So they're taking this extra meat that wasn't theirs, it was the offerers, and now they're taking God's portion too. That's the real evil here. The fat is God's, and they're taking before it's even sacrificed. That belongs to Him. And not to eat of what? Not to eat of this fat. That fat's supposed to be sacrificed to God. So that was their sin here, is taking these portions, both from the men and from God. Next portion we're going to see that Samuel's parents are going to visit him every year, and we see Samuel continues to prosper. Verse 18. Samuel ministered before the Lord, even as a child, wearing a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother used to make him a little robe and bring it to him year by year, when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, the Lord give you descendants from this woman for the loan that was given to the Lord. Then they would go to their own home. The Lord visited Hannah, so she conceived and bore 3 sons and 2 daughters. And meanwhile, we're told, the child Samuel grew before the Lord. And we'll continue to see that in little pieces as we go on. It'll mention Samuel again. He's grown. He's continuing on and so forth. Next chapter, or next section here, we're going to see that God's had enough of Eli's sons, all this doing. We don't know the time frame here, what's been going on. We know how long that Eli lives. We know how long he serves as a judge, which is 40 years. But we don't know how many years he's actually judged up to this point in time. How long has this been going on? Has it been a year? Has it been 20 years? Who knows? But the point is, he's very old. We're going to learn that too. So it's apparently been a longer stretch of period of time. And we see that God will deal with them harshly. Begin at verse 22. Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did to all Israel. And again, did he hear it right then when he was very old, or has he known about this for a while? I don't know that either. We're not told. We are told later that he knew about it. God kind of recognizes he knew about it and did nothing about it to sanction his kids. But anyway, at some point he knows everything his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle meeting. So it's another offense that they did here, desecrating the temple there of the tabernacle. And so he said to them, why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. Know, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? Nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father because the Lord desired to kill them. Now, why this is stated here, I don't know, because that prophecy has not been told just yet to Eli, as far as we know. The child Samuel grew in stature, in favor both with the Lord and men. So a little piece about Samuel, reminding us about this Samuel who's in the background. And a man of God came to Eli, we're not told who this man was, and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, did I not clearly reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? Did I not choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense, and to wear an ephod before me? And did I not give to the house of your father all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire? Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering which I have commanded in my dwelling place, and honor your sons more than me, and make yourselves fat with the best of all the offerings of Israel, my people? And therefore the Lord God of Israel says, I said indeed that your house and the house of your father would walk before me forever. But now, the Lord says, far be it from me. For those who honor me, I will honor. Those who despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days are coming that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house. And you'll see an enemy in my dwelling place, despite all the good which God does for Israel. And there shall not be an old man in your house forever." In other words, your offspring is not going to live long. "But any of your men whom I do not cut off my altar shall consume your eyes and grieve your heart. And all the descendants of your house shall die in the flower of their age," in their youth, in other words. "Now this shall be a sign to you that will come upon your two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. Then I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who shall do according to what is in my heart and in my mind. I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before me, my anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left in your house will come and bow down to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread and say, 'Please put me in one of the priestly positions that I may eat a piece of bread.'" So we see this prophecy, and it's a very fierce, staunch prophecy. Next, we're going to see Samuel's first contact. We've been reminded about Samuel. He's growing up. He's growing in favor with God and with man. In chapter 3, he's going to have his very first contact with God. And we're also going to see him established as a prophet. Let's read chapter 3. "Now the boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli. And the word of the Lord was rare in those days." And Eli realizes this. God's not talking to a lot of people. It's rare. Again, there was no widespread revelation. "And it came to pass at that time," verse 2, "while Eli was lying down in his place, when his eyes had begun to grow so dim that he could not see." Again, we keep on seeing this reference to Eli, by the way, of his eyes going dim. He's getting older. We'll see that final fruition of blindness at the end when we get there. "He was lying down in his place when his eyes had begun to grow so dim he could not see, before the lamp of God went out in the tabernacle of the Lord where the ark of God was." So the ark's there in their presence. "And while Samuel was lying down, that the Lord called Samuel. And he answered, 'Here I am.' And so he ran to Eli and said, 'Here I am, for you called me.'" So he thinks Eli's calling on him. So he gets up and goes. Again, God's never talked to him. This is something new to him. Doesn't even suspect it. "And he said, 'I did not call. Lie down again.' And he went and lay down." Eli doesn't think anything of it this time either. Maybe he's dreaming. "And the Lord called yet again, 'Samuel.' So Samuel arose, went to Eli, and he said, 'Here I am, for you called me.' He answered, 'I did not call, my son. Lie down again.'" Verse 7, "Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor was the word of the Lord yet revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel again, a third time. And so he rose and went to Eli and said, 'Here I am, for you did call me.' Eli perceived that the Lord had called the boy," so he kind of gets it now. Maybe this is going on, something a little different here. "Therefore Eli said to Samuel, 'Go lie down, and it shall be, if he calls you, that you must say, "Speak, Lord, for your servant hears." And so Samuel went and lay down in his place. "Now the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, 'Samuel, Samuel.'" What it means by "he come and stood by him," I don't know. Whether they're in presence or not. "Samuel answered, 'Speak, for your servant hears.' The Lord said to Samuel, 'Behold, I will do something in Israel, at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day, I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. So he's revealing this prophecy that he had revealed to Eli. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows. I told Eri, he knows it. Because his sons made themselves vile. You see a version here, or see an example here of they chose to be vile. They made themselves this way. A lot of people say that they're positioned to do something as they're born, but they're not. But we see Eli's portion here. He did not restrain them, whatever that entails. And therefore, because of this, I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or offering forever. There's no way to get out of this. This is going to happen. It's severe. There's no way to get out of it. So Samuel lay down until morning. He opened the doors of the house of the Lord. Samuel was afraid to tell Eli the vision, even though he knows that Eli knows it. But now he knows it too. And Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." And he answered, "Here I am." He said, "What is the word that the Lord spoke to you? Please do not hide it from me." So he really believes that voice he heard the other night was from God. He wants to know it was. "Please do not hide it from me. God do so to you, and more also if you hide anything from me of all the things that he said to you." So in other words, he's saying, whatever you got to say, just say it. I can take it. I want to hear it. Samuel told him everything. He hid nothing from him. And he said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him." So Samuel grew, we're told again. And the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. All Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord. So we see that this was known. The Lord appeared again in Shiloh, this place. For the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. Verse 1 of chapter 4, "And all the word of Samuel came to all Israel." So all of Israel knows this. He's the next in line, for lack of a better term. Chapter 4. This is the last chapter. We don't know how long it's been. There's no time frame given here whenever he spoke this to Samuel. But we do know that Eli was already old. But we also know it's the last times and days of Eli and his sons. Israel's about to go into battle with the Philistines, we're going to see and read about. They will lose this battle. Israel's going to get beat. Then they're going to take this ark that's in Shiloh. They're going to take it to them, and they're going to take that into battle with them. And they're going to lose there too. And they're going to lose the ark. The Philistines are going to take the ark. And we're also going to see the prophecy of Eli's son become true. 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 2. Or in verse 1. "Now Israel went out to battle against the Philistines and encamped between Ebenezer, and the Philistines encamped in Aphek. The Philistines put themselves in battle array against Israel. And when they joined battle, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men of the army in the field. And when the people had come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, 'Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from Shiloh to us.'" And who do you think is going to bring it? We'll see that in a minute. "That when it comes among us, it may save us from the hand of our enemies." So they're putting this faith in this ark rather than fully in God. "So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts who dwells between the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God." So I'm supposing they're the ones who brought it. They came with it anyway. "And when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted so loudly that the earth shook. Now when the Philistines heard the noise of the shouting," don't forget, they just won this first battle. The Philistines did. "They heard this shout and they said, 'What does the sound of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean?' And they understood that the Ark of the Lord had come into the camp." And we're going to learn something about, as we talk about through all our classes, how all these things that have been done, these great deeds have been done for Israel, that it was known by all people. It's passed on from generation to generation. As CL's pointed out a lot of these foreign people also knew these acts. All those great works in Egypt and so forth. Verse 7. "So the Philistines were afraid, for they said, 'God has come into the camp.' And they said, 'Woe to us, for such a thing has never happened before. Woe to us. Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods?'" Again, they don't quite get it. It's a god. It's not gods. but they understand there's power there. These are the gods, again plural, who struck the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. So they even know about this, all this time frame down. They're aware of all the stories of what happened, and they believe it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be afraid. What are we going to do? This ark's here. These gods are here. Be strong. Conduct yourselves like men, you Philistines, that you do not become servants of the Hebrews as they have been to you. They're your servants right now. Don't become their servants. Conduct yourselves like men and fight. And so the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated. And every man fled to his tent. And there was a very great slaughter. And there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. Also the ark of God was captured. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. They died in the same day. So the prophecy's been fulfilled. But Eli's not aware of it yet. Eli's not there. Next portion is where Eli hears the fate of his sons, and he also dies. Verse 12. Then a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line the same day and came to Shiloh with his clothes torn, his dirt on his head. When he came, there was Eli sitting on a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. He knew the ark had been taken. What's going to happen to it? He knows the fate of his sons, what it's going to be. And here they've taken the ark. And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does the sound of the tumult mean?" And the man came quickly and told Eli. And Eli was 98 years old. His eyes were so dim that he could not see. So his vision's been going and going. The man said to Eli, "I am he who came from the battle, and I fled today from the battle line." And he said, "What happened to my son?" And so the messenger answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has been a great slaughter among the people. Also, your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been captured." Then it happened when he made mention of the ark of God, not about his sons, but we found about the ark in addition to, that Eli fell off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died. For the man was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel for 40 years. So we find the time frame of his judgment here. In closing here, we see the remains here. We're going to see this, that Eli has a grandson that's born of Phinehas' wife, and she's going to die as well. Now his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child and due to be delivered. When she heard the news that the ark of God was captured, and then her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and gave birth, for her labor pains came upon her. About the time of her death, the women who stood by said to her, "Do not fear, for you have borne a son." But she did not answer, nor did she regard it. She named the child Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel, because the ark of God has been captured, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." And she said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the ark of God has been captured." Next time we'll talk about Samuel. Questions or comments?